The date is July 29th, 1994, and we're watching The Mask. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Charlie Shoemaker to my Stanley Ipkiss.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
Bet you didn't know he had a last name, huh? I don't think it's ever said in the movie.
I didn't. I was hoping I was going to get to be the Milo to your Stanley.
Oh my god! I actually thought of Milo at one point too, and I'm like, I don't know. But so this week we are looking back at July 1994, when the movies and theaters were Baby's Day Out, North, The Client, Angels in the Outfield, and of course, our movie for today, The Mask, which earned $351.6 million on an $18 million budget.
And as always, this is your courtesy spoiler warning, so there will be spoilers ahead. If you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, please hit pause, go watch it, then come back, hit play, and hear what we have to say.
The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, I do have two. First, we've got From Zero to Hero.
Too plain.
Well, then you're really not going to like the second one. The second tagline is Smokin'.
I guess it's all right.
I mean, it is like S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S-S- and no G on the end of that. So they definitely bring in the essence of that catchphrase, but it's, yeah, just straight into the point, I guess.
I mean, I guess it's like it references the movie. I saw that Zero to Hero was the tagline, and I don't know, maybe we'll discuss it later, but I'm not sure that the mask is necessarily a hero.
Yeah. Well, we will get to that in a sec, but first, let's go to call in and get a 60-second synopsis.
All right. Stanley Ipkiss is your typical nice guy, unlucky in love and unlucky in life. All that changes when he finds a wooden mask, which just happens to be enchanted by the spirit of Loki, the Norse god of mischief. Now, as the cartoonish crime-fighting superhero The Mask, Stanley fights to win the heart of the beautiful Tina Carlyle while drawing the ire of Edge City gangster Dorian Tyrell. Will The Mask give Stanley the courage to become the man he's always wished he could be? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Right on. Yes, mentioned Loki in your 60-second synopsis. Anyone that's a regular listener on this show may have noticed that we like to celebrate the new stuff that's coming out. We like to celebrate anniversaries on this show. And so this week, we are celebrating the release of the new series Loki and tying a really loose thread to it to bring in another movie that features Loki in it. And so that's why we've got the mask. We did talk on our Ace Ventura episode about how Ace Ventura was kind of the jumping off point of Jim Carrey for just about everyone in the world. Not many people knew who he was, and this was the very next movie that came out, and I remember how excited I was to see this movie. I remember I had a friend of mine, we had seen Ace Ventura together, and he went to see The Mask without me, but the first thing he said to me about it is, Jim Carrey is so weird looking when he's not trying to be weird looking. So he didn't like Jim Carrey without the big swoopy haircut that Ace Ventura had. But yeah, I just remember how sick I got of the taglines of this movie, or the quotes of this movie, the somebody stop me and smoking, and they were all going on at the same time as all the alrighty thens and all that sort of thing. So it was just Jim Carrey overload for me, I remember. But I did love this movie. What about you, though, Colin? What was your experience with The Mask?
So I'm pretty sure that I didn't actually watch The Mask until I was an adult. Okay. I do remember it being, like, very popular amongst my friends, but it was kind of, like, one of those ones, again, I didn't have access to, like, a video store, and there was no streaming services back then, so it was like, if you missed it, you just kind of missed it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, But at the same time, it was so popular that it was also one of those things, like, you couldn't help but know all the like set pieces, basically, like the fun, like all the funny lines and everything. It's kind of like how it's kind of like Family Guy, you know, like if you watch Family Guy, there's a million references to a million movies that most of them I probably haven't seen, but like I definitely know where they're coming from, and The Mask is one of those types of things. So
yeah, let's direct people to our Roadhouse episode
for
exactly. Just how we feel about that exact situation. Yeah,
the one thing I do remember is that even though I hadn't watched the movie, I think I did watch a couple episodes of the cartoon show.
Okay,
that was on very briefly.
Yeah,
and I remember I had a Mask action figure. That was one where, like, you would squeeze his legs and his eyeballs would pop out. And I'm pretty sure it reminds me of another Ghostbusters, like, ghost action figure.
Yes.
And I feel like they might have just ripped it off.
Quite possibly.
Or it was a remodel.
Yeah, I think actually it was a whole series of them. I think you could get them for all four of the main Ghostbusters. Yeah, it was the I'm Scared of Ghosts line or whatever.
Yeah.
I do also remember how absolutely cutting edge the special effects were in this, and I gotta say they're not terrible. Like they kind of hold up. There are a few shaky ones, but they do kind of hold up, which was impressive to me. What about the comics? Because I know you and I both have kind of a love of comic books and everything like that. Did you ever go and read any of the Mask comics? I know personally I think I bought like 3 issues of the Mask.
I hadn't read it, but in preparation for this episode, I went on the library's like digital site Hoopla, and I read, I think it was like the first couple of issues.
Yeah.
They had the mask omnibus on there. So I read the first couple of issues and I was very surprised at how different it is.
Yeah. From what I remember, it's much darker.
Yeah.
Like he kills a lot in the comics.
Yeah. Like he's like a comedian version of the Punisher.
Yeah.
Is the best way I could describe it. And like even Stanley, he's not like a happy go like down on his luck, like sad puppy dog type of guy. He's like a mean asshole kind of guy.
Yeah, it's almost like as if Joaquin Phoenix's Joker had access to this power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into The Mask. It's directed by Chuck Russell, who is a director on The Scorpion King, Eraser, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warrior, and the 1988 version of The Blob. So he kind of comes from a scary background, which is interesting considering that's what the comic is all about, but not so much this movie.
Yeah.
It's produced by Robert Engelman, who we've talked about a couple times now, producer on Mortal Kombat and Blade, as well as Mystery Men, Little Nicky, Scooby-Doo, From Justin to Kelly. And it's written by Michael Fallon, who has 3 total writing credits, Hardware and The Virgin of Juarez are the other 2, and also written by Mark Verheiden, who is a writer on My Name is Bruce, Time Cop 1 and 2, and The Series, which he is also the creator of, also developed the Swamp Thing series that only lasted 1 season, plus a writer on multiple episodes of shows like Daredevil, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, Constantine, Falling Skies, Heroes, Smallville, and others. So, you know, a little bit of comic book and a little bit of horror again.
Yeah.
So just where the tone of this movie actually comes from, I'm not sure, because we've also got written by Mike Werb, who is a writer on Curious George, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, Face Off, Firehouse Dog, Darkman 3, Die, Darkman, Die. So just judging by, though, the writing staff on this movie, it doesn't seem like they're the kind that should be writing a slapstick comic character.
Yeah, you really would have thought they would have just stayed with the source material a little bit more.
But I mean, when you have someone like Jim Carrey, which I actually read, the director said that Jim Carrey saved him so much money in CGI because of how physical he could be. Well, I guess if you're going to have Jim Carrey, you're not going to make him dark, because look what happened with the Cable Guy.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, like, you know, if they were ever going to reboot The Mask, especially nowadays, because, you know, Hollywood is so comic book heavy. And now, like, having read the comics, I wonder if they would, in an attempt to kind of differentiate it from the Jim Carrey version, go that route.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost one of those things where, because the comic is kind of an unknown commodity, like, the most people's impression of The Mask would likely have come from the Jim Carrey movie. So it's
from
like,
So
how do you balance the expectations?
Yeah, it's like having Rian Johnson take on Star Wars, and you piss everyone off.
Yeah.
Because you try to reimagine it. So we open the movie on Edge City, where we see scuba divers with an acetylene torch swimming in the bay, and they find a box, and while breaking the chain, the one scuba diver gets crushed by a pipe, and we see the mask float to the surface. The opening already, though, is a little bit dark when you think about the fact that, hey, we just watched someone die.
I know!
In the opening, like, 30 seconds of this movie.
And it never comes up again.
Right?
Like, you couldn't even have, like, a newspaper story being like, oh, body found at the bottom of the lake, or like,
yeah,
horrific accident, and
a headline sitting on, yeah, on his desk. But so we cut to Edge City Savings and Loan, and we get to meet our hero for the movie, Stanley Ipkiss, who is played by Jim Carrey. This is the second of three movies he did in 1994. The first was Ace, and the second was Dumb and Dumber. What I found fascinating was for Ace Ventura, he got paid $350,000. For this one, he got paid $450,000 because he was signed to this movie before Ace Ventura even hit theaters. And then Dumb and Dumber, he got $7 million. So
yeah, he was definitely like, when you went back to the director, how Jim Carrey saved him money, I feel like that probably had more to do with saving a lot of money on this production.
It was like when we were talking about Sean William Scott in American Pie, where they got him for like a ridiculously cheap amount.
That's like when the Oilers had Connor McDavid on his entry-level contract.
Yeah. So I did also read, though, with Stanley Ipkiss that there were a few other possibilities. Matthew Broderick, Steve Martin, Rick Moranis, Martin Short, Keanu Reeves, Mike Myers, John Ritter, and Robin Williams were all possibilities for the mask.
The only person in that list that I can see doing a comparable job is Martin Short.
Yeah. Well, maybe Robin Williams.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's something about Robin Williams' face that I just feel like it isn't there.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you mean, especially with like Martin Short pulling faces, that's for sure. Steve Martin might have also been a possibility. Like that, he's also someone that's a very physical guy like Martin Short sometimes.
Yeah.
But Stanley has concert tickets and gets rejected by the girl that he thinks he's going with. Basically, she uses him, but Stanley doesn't see it. And so his buddy, Charlie Shoemaker, walks up during this exchange, and he's played by comedian Richard Jenny, who has 10 total credits, Bird, Platypus Man, Dad's Week Off, bunch of voice work. And so with nothing to do, Charlie wants to take Stanley to the Coco Bongo Club, the perfect night on the town, and we cue the lightning.
Mm-hmm.
But this is when, enter into the bank, a super hot Tina Carlisle. We talked about her in Demolition Man with Tyler, and this is the moment. Cameron Diaz making her acting debut, and she's from There's Something About Mary, Charlie's Angels, My Best Friend's Wedding, and Shrek. But man, oh, she is dynamite in this movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've never been like a big Cameron Diaz supporter, but I will say, the shot when she enters the bank and they start at her feet and then like go up as she stands up.
Yeah.
It seems like she has more leg than a human being should have. Like her legs are impossibly long.
Other possibilities for this character, I read, the first few are people I don't even know who they are. Kelly Rutherford, India Allen, Melissa Moore, Paige French, Vanessa Angel. But then here's a few that I do recognize. Jennifer Connelly, Christy Swanson, Vanessa Williams, and Anna Nicole Smith. Apparently Anna Nicole Smith was actually the closest to getting this role.
Yeah, I read that.
Which is why you can see why she's dressed like this in the opening scene. But out of those choices, yeah, maybe someone like Jennifer Connelly or Vanessa Williams might have been nice, but good for Cameron Diaz. This is her start for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to open a new account, and she's absolutely resistant. Colin, she's resistant to Charlie's horn doggedness. I mean, how? How is it possible that she could resist our buddy here, Charlie?
My favorite thing is when Charlie, like, and Stanley are watching her. He has this like game face moment where he just
right?
kind of like gets in his like suave mood. He's like, watch this. And then he's gonna go walk over, and then yeah, he just gets her jacket. Yeah. But still takes the time to sniff her jacket while she's only maybe 2 meters away, which I feel like is that's something. I don't know.
Yeah, and being super flirtation, like openly flirtatious with Stanley, you know, and so it's like, take the hit, buddy. Obviously, she's got a different type. But I like when she asks for a Kleenex, and he's like, for what? Well, to dry off. Like, and it's like, really? A Kleenex? Of course he asked why, because I don't know if I've ever used a Kleenex to dry off.
Yeah, I feel like Kleenexes just tear apart when they get too wet.
Yeah, yeah. But we find out that she has a camera in her purse, which is broadcasting back to the mobster guy, Dorian. And then we cut to Dorian, who is watching this feed. And he's played by Peter Green, who is in The Bounty Hunter, Blue Streak, a bunch of TV. Outside of this, probably best known as Zed in Pulp Fiction. I read Dorian could have been played by Jack Nicholson, Willem Dafoe, Dennis Hopper, Robert De Niro, or Rupert Everett.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson and Willem Dafoe, both. I could see both of them playing that role.
Dennis Hopper's got some good crazy in him. Like, De Niro and Rupert Everett. Rupert Everett is really weird, especially since I usually only associate him with my best friend's wedding. But,
but who is Dennis Hopper?
Dennis, Speed. The bad guy in Speed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. But we find out that Dorian is kind of the number two guy to a crime boss named Nico, but Dorian has gone rogue. He has plans to usurp the mob kingdom in Edge City, and his henchmen are worried because if you mess with Nico, you end up taking a dirt nap. But the whole bit, though, with Dorian, I just don't... I don't quite understand what his relationship actually is with Nico. Like, is he the number two guy?
Yeah.
Or is he a rival? Like,
to me, it seemed like he was more not like it didn't seem like he was in Nico's like chain. It seemed more like he was in another group and was trying to make his move to kind of usurp him as the dominant mobster in Edge City.
Yeah. Okay. It's almost like we're dealing with territories.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might be what it is. Dorian's trying to move into Nico's zone.
Yeah. Like almost like there would have been like a respect of like, yeah, we have our turf and we understand that like you have like the bigger piece of the pie of the city, but now we're going to make the moves to be the dominant group.
Yeah. So Stanley, going out that night, has to go pick up his car from the mechanic, and they're just a bunch of scam artists. I love the line with the one mechanic of, hey, what's this? And the other guy says, about $70.
Yeah.
But they tell Stanley his brake drums are shot and he needs a new transmission. And he had come in for like an oil change.
Yeah. I really identify with this scene because this is how I feel any time I take my car to like a mechanic, even for a routine checkup.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh yeah, well, you know, oh, just so you know, we thought maybe we should do this, your cabin air filter, blah, 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 this thing, whatever. And you're just, I'm just like, I don't know. Sure.
Yeah.
How much is it going to cost? Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the times that I wish that I was a car guy is with something like this.
Yeah.
So this automotive shop, though, is actually filmed in an old firehouse, specifically the same one they filmed in for Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Yeah, which I thought was neat.
It would have been cool if, as like an Easter egg, they had like an Ecto-1 kind of just like tarped in the
background.
Up in the back.
Yeah. So the mechanics say, bring around the loner. And man, I love that loner. That's Studebaker. Oh, man. It's like a character in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So Stanley arrives at the Coco Bongo Club and meets up with Charlie, and Charlie bribes his way into the club. I would love to be that smooth slipping cash to someone. Like the way that he's, hey, how's it going, buddy? And he holds up the dollar bills up on his chest there, and it's just smooth, Charlie.
Yeah.
Too bad the girls aren't actually that interested in you in everyday life, but here they are. But unable to get in, Stanley makes the mistake of trying to cross the rope to follow Charlie, and he gets manhandled by the bouncers, thrown out, and manages to bump into Tina outside the club, and is super embarrassed when the valet brings about his piece of shit loner. Now, it's a terrible car, but really, it's said that he drives a 93 Civic. Would that have really been much of an improvement?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm trying to imagine. I mean, Civics are nice cars now.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like they would have been anything special, though, in the mid-90s.
No, they wouldn't have been. But, I mean, other than the reference to the 93 Civic, there's this whole, ambiguous time that this place is set in. Like, it's just, I could never quite tell, like, is it supposed to be the 40s or 50s? Or is it, so except for the reference to the 93 Civic, it's kind of like, well, it's kind of a timeless piece other than that.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I found it odd that they chose to not set it in, like, the real world and have it be in Edge City.
Yeah.
It would have been maybe more interesting to just, like, scrap that piece of it and have it be in New York or some place that people would know, I guess, instead of, because that's kind of what happens. Like, it's the same with, like, in Batman, especially the 90s Batman's Gotham, where it's, like, just soundstage all over the place and this, like, amalgam of a bunch of different cities just to kind of make it look like a place that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. So now here's where we get the great moment with the car where Stanley is driving across the bridge and it breaks down. And we get this whole Rube Goldberg chain reaction when he gets mad at the car and kicks the bumper off. And then everything just falls apart. All the doors fall off and everything like that. But he sees something floating in the water and he thinks it's a person. And he goes to rescue him and he ends up finding the mask. And we've got the cops that show up. Hey, you, what are you doing down there? Just looking for my mask. Got it. So when he gets home, the manager of the building says, do you have any idea what time it is? What's the deal here? Like, this was another part where I asked, like, what year is it? Because, like, it's like he's in a boarding house or something, the way that this landlord reacts.
Yeah, like, what do you care?
Yeah, not your business. And then he comes home and turns on some cartoons. Like, this guy loves his cartoons. And we meet Milo the dog. You know, we find out that one of the things that he doesn't like to do is let go of frisbees and stuff.
Yeah.
And then the manager hammers on the wall to tell him to turn off his cartoons. Like, what is the deal?
You kind of just expect at some point for her to just, like, turn off all the lights like a prison. It's just like, lights out.
Yeah. But we get a little ominous moment here from Milo because he doesn't like the mask. He growls at it. Stanley's like, what don't you like about this mask? And he puts it on, which in reality is a 4-hour process, I found out. Like, him actually putting on the makeup was a 4-hour process.
Oh.
And the teeth, I read, were something that originally were only supposed to be used in silent moments, but Jim Carrey learned how to talk while wearing them. So they left them the whole time. And I'm just like, I'm glad because the mask isn't the mask without those teeth.
Yeah.
Like, I know I already don't like the mask when he has hair. When Dorian does it at the end, it doesn't look right then either.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Dorian's whole thing with the mask, like, we'll talk about it more when that happens. But I don't like any of that. But but I found it really, like, I don't know, just the look of the mask. It's funny, but it's almost like one of those things, if you stare at it for too long, it's really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
The more you look at it, the more you kind of see, like, how it's worked. Like, even the back of his head, you can see
kind of where they've, like, the seam of it.
Yeah. Well, and see, the other thing I don't understand about the mask is, how come at no point in this movie does anyone go, dude, what's up with your face?
Yeah.
Like, no one questions it for how weird it looks.
Yeah, for sure.
And so this is where we get some of our famous lines like smoking and P-A-R-T-Y because I gotta. And we get a bunch of fourth wall breaking as well, which makes me kind of think of Deadpool. You know, the mask did it first, Deadpool. Come up with a new shtick. Actually, Deadpool's probably been around longer than the mask when it comes to comics, hasn't he? I don't even know.
I don't know. I feel like Deadpool, let's see.
I mean, he was an X-Man originally. I feel like he was probably introduced in the 70s, and I think the mask is an 80s comic.
I think Deadpool is a 90s character because he came in an X-Force.
Oh, X-Force, that's right.
Yeah, 1991.
Oh, okay.
New Mutants 98.
Hmm, nice. Okay, so then I think the mask did it first.
Yeah.
So he makes a bunch of noise in the hallway, and the manager comes out, and she's really got that shotgun handy, hey? She just keeps it right by the door.
Yeah.
Like, this is a no-nonsense woman. Like, I would not want to live in this apartment building. So he goes outside and he gets crossed by this gang who they don't say anything about his face, but they're all, you know, hey, where are you going? Where are you going? Like, I feel like if I saw someone that was dressed like that, I'd probably be like, eh, we'll take the next one. This guy's clearly a lunatic. And we get things like the wedgie, where he pulls the underwear over his head. that would hurt, especially from the front like he does in the movie.
Yeah. This is like a deviate. This is kind of like both this gang and later when he goes back to the auto body shop. These two scenes are from the comic book. Mm-hmm. But like I said at the top, like in both those scenes, he ends up killing everybody instead of just like hilariously pranking them.
Yeah, because the closest we get is the balloon animal that he makes into a Tommy gun, but he doesn't actually hit anyone.
Yeah.
So he says, with these powers, I could be a superhero. What exactly are the mask's powers? Like, I don't think I read enough of these comics to understand how his powers work. Why can he manipulate everything around him and not just himself?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like his powers are just like magic.
Yeah.
And I mean, that kind of makes he basically has like the power of magical pranking, in my opinion, which makes sense being like with Loki, like as the god of mischief. It's just taken the mischief level to reality, I suppose.
Yeah, you want Hagrid to come out and say, "You're a wizard, Stanley."
Yeah. You're a wizard.
After he's decided that he could be a superhero, first he says, "Hold on to your lug nuts. It's time for an overhaul," because he deals with the shady mechanics and he wakes up in bed. So is wearing the mask like going on a bender? Like, does he have any memories of the night before, or does he think it was a dream, or is there an amnesia quality to, you know, a split personality situation?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because later on it seems like he whatever it is, but he gets control of the situation. Mm-hmm. Right? And so like he can it's almost like he has more presence as the mask. Like in the first couple, it's almost like he's just blackout drunk.
Yeah.
And then later on, exactly, it's like he has the actual presence where he can take the mask on and off when he wants.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, at this point that's kind of what it seems to me, where it's just kind of but then it oh, I guess it's because the day happens.
Yeah. Well, that's why I came off.
Yeah, I'm also kind of wondering, how did he get in bed? Like, was the mask just like, I feel like going to sleep, and then he laid in bed and day came and it just fell off.
I sure am tuckered. And you know, has the presence of mind to put on pajamas and everything.
Yeah.
So this is when Lieutenant Calloway comes a-knockin'. And he's played by Peter Rigger, who was in Animal House, Oscar, Traffic, The Sopranos, a TV series called Dads, which had Seth Green in it, which I watched. I like that one. And The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I read that this character could have been played by Richard Gere, Tim Allen, Warren Beatty, John Hurt, or Pierce Brosnan.
All solid picks, I guess.
Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan would have been interesting.
A little bit.
Especially if he kept the British accent.
Yeah.
Because he would have been James Bond at this point, wouldn't he have?
I think so, yeah, probably. But I mean, Daniel Craig did Knives Out while he was James Bond, you know, like it's not like they're contracted just to play James Bond, so.
Yeah.
But it definitely would have been hard to separate him.
Yeah, I just feel like Pierce Brosnan, maybe it's just, he was like the first James Bond I was ever like really aware of.
Yeah.
And he just really seemed James Bond when he was James Bond.
He did, that's for sure. But yeah, so Lieutenant Calloway shows up asking about the disturbance last night, and Stanley gets a chance to look out into the hall to see all the holes that were made. But how are the cops only here now? Like, the landlady is still explaining what happened the night before. Why did it take them like 5 hours to get here to... There were shots discharged inside this building.
Yeah, maybe they're just understaffed, that's why they need the mask. Need a vigilante crime fighter to come and save the day.
Yeah. But Stanley apparently, or supposedly, slept through it all. You know, this is impossible. No, those pajamas are impossible. I love that line.
Yeah.
We find out a little bit more about Milo as well, because once he gets rid of Lieutenant Calloway, Stanley realizes he's late for work, and Milo is a master of keys. He's the key master, but he doesn't like giving them up. But Stanley decides to throw away the mask because clearly it's a problem, so he throws it out the window, but it boomerangs back into the house.
I'm wondering, like, what the, like, why would the mask have done that? Why does the mask care about Stanley?
Mm-hmm. It had fun? I don't know.
To me, the mask could have just been picked up by anybody else on the street, and then, like, somebody else would have just got it. It seems they don't really ever explain, like, what the connection.
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like what the mask is missing is a little bit of what, they did between Venom and Eddie Brock in the new Venom movies.
Okay, yeah.
Where the mask actually has like its own thoughts, because that is in the comic as well. where it's like the mask actually like talks to him when he's when it's off his face or whatever.
Hmm. Well, we get a quick scene of Lieutenant Calloway heading to his next crime scene, which is at Ripley's Auto Finishing. We get the line, "I want a proctologist standing by," because they have exhaust systems shoved up their ass instead of being brutally murdered like they were in the comic.
Yeah.
But I've never noticed that he changes the sign of the mechanic shop to say Rip-Off Auto.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. I mean, however, the place was called Ripley's Auto Finishing. I don't even understand how he changed it to say Rip-Off, because there's not enough Fs. But still, I noticed it for the first time that he changed the sign to say Rip-Off, which I thought was a nice little touch.
Huh.
So at work, Charlie wonders where Stanley was last night. Well, you know, you ditched him, you dick. But Mr. Dickey, the bank's owner's son, gives Stanley shit for being 40 minutes late. And we find out just how meek and demure Stanley is. And this is when Peggy Brandt from the Tribune comes in looking for Stanley. She's played by Amy Yazbeck, who did a bunch of TV. She was in Pretty Woman, Problem Child, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. She was Maid Marian in that one.
Yeah.
Oh, did you actually see Men in Tights now?
Oh, no. No, I didn't.
Maybe you were thinking Prince of Thieves.
I was thinking Prince of Thieves.
Okay, yeah.
Different one?
Yeah, Men in Tights, the Mel Brooks one.
Okay, then I'm just like Mandela affecting myself right now.
But I love that, once again, Charlie starts peacocking and gets shot down immediately because, you know, she's in there looking for Stanley, not anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But she's following the client list from the auto mechanic for the story. But this is where Stanley finds out that she's actually like a Dear Abby type columnist. And she had published one of his letters, Nice Guys Finish Last. A joke that I never noticed before, or never got before, was when she says, "Yeah, most men think monogamy is some kind of wood." I thought that was a great subtle line.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah. But she's looking to become a real reporter and gives Stanley her card where she says, "This is my, you know, personal number." And it's like, "Ooh, Stanley, you got two on the hook, man." Because, you know, there's nothing wrong with Peggy Brandt either. We get now the scene where Dorian goes to visit Nico. See, this is the part where I think that maybe he's a subordinate of Nico and not like a rival boss.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Nico is upset because the club was almost shut down because Dorian is using it to run his own schemes. So maybe Nico is like the club owner? I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, it seems like the gang owns the club. But I mean, Nico's the head of the gang. So yeah, he probably owns it.
I mean, no matter what, it doesn't matter by the end of this movie.
Yeah.
But I guess I wasn't clear enough on their relationship. Nico is played by Orestes Matesina, who was in Wild Wild West and nothing else I recognize. But this golf ball in the mouth has always kind of... You've now mentioned the Mandela effect in a couple of our recent episodes, once today and once back in our Happy Gilmore episode. And this is one of those ones where I can't watch this golf swing without just cringing every single time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the fact that when the one guy gets curb stomped in American History X, and people walk out of that and go, "Oh, it was so disturbing. That was the grossest thing I've ever seen." It's like, no, you see his teeth on the curb and you see the guy swing his foot. You'd never actually see but everyone thinks that the skull was caved in this scene. And it's like, no. But yeah, this golf ball one, though, has always been one that makes me cringe.
I'm not sure, like, as an actor, I could have laid down for that.
Yeah.
I think no matter how lightly you swung the club, I would be scared shitless.
Yeah. How made out of Nerf it is, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
And we cut back to Stanley in bed having a dream about the night before at the club, but it's suddenly much cooler because he's smoking a cigarette and he has a Porsche. And this whole scene turns into Stepmother is an Alien again when Tina starts licking his face. But he wakes up and it's Milo that's actually licking his face. But yeah, he's kind of obsessed with Tina now.
Yeah.
But for a moment, I do want to circle back to that Porsche in his dream. It's a 1983 Porsche 911 SC Cabrio. And here we go with Sponsorship Corner.
Sponsorship
So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, The Mask is brought to you by Porsche, Ford, Cadillac, and Studebaker Cars, Looney Tunes and Tex Avery Cartoons, Remo Drum Skins, Sony Electronics, McDonald's Restaurants, Vector Mousetraps, and Boston Pencil Sharpeners. Plus, a special shout-out to the fictional companies of Edge City Savings and Loan, Ripley's Auto Finishing, Edge City Power, Edge City Tribune, The Warwick Hotel, The Book, The Masks We Wear by Dr. Arthur Newman, and the Coco Bongo Club. And I will also mention a few times, they do mention Stanley's 1989 Honda Civic. Or, oh, 89, it's not even a 93.
Oh, yeah.
They do mention it a few times, but although it's a very specific vehicle mentioned, it's never actually shown. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Okay, so Milo wakes Stanley up from this dream, and Stanley spots the mask. It's out in the open on the couch. How did he not notice it before he went to bed? You know, when it was still light out?
Yeah.
Well, it's time for a night out as the mask in a zoot suit. I read that this suit is based on one that Jim Carrey's mother made for him when he did his first attempt at stand-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. But, like, I don't know if I'd want to go to stand-up wearing a bright yellow suit. Like, it just... I don't know. I guess you're making a statement at that point.
Like one of the first rules of stand-up comedy is that your clothing can't be funnier than you are. So I don't know that wearing a yellow suit would be the best move.
So this is where we get more famous mask lines like, "Somebody, stop me!" And he's a bit low on the green, so he needs to make a stop first. And we cut to Dorian's men, who are about to break into the bank, but the mask has beat them there. So I guess Nico's threat from earlier really didn't matter at all.
No.
In the club, we get to watch Tina do a very Jessica Rabbit-type performance.
Yeah.
And we get all the funny cartoon reactions from the mask, where some of them hold up and some of them don't. Like, I feel like the heart pumping in his chest doesn't look very good, but the wolf face actually does look pretty good. You know, like, they're still not the greatest overall, but... Man, they've got Mortal Kombat beat. I'll give it that much.
Yeah, the wolf was interesting because it was kind of like at some points it just looked a little bit off. But I noticed like he was actually closing his eyes when he was whistling.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've used that like eyes out, tongue roll gif for so many things. It's like one of my go-tos.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm chatting people on Facebook, the heart I've always liked that one too. But it did. When I was watching it closely, it did seem kind of like it seemed kind of fake almost.
A little cut and paste.
Yeah.
But now the mask takes over this performance and starts swing dancing with Tina. And this is again where it's like, how does his magic work? Because he changes the whole band into different outfits.
Yeah.
But I read that most of this dancing is actually Jim Carrey and Cameron Diaz, like, impressively.
Yeah.
Except for the overhead shots where they're doing the really complicated moves. And it's like, damn, guys, like, you've got some moves. Like, good on ya. Because there were some big moves in there. Having done community theater with you, we know the limitations of what your average... person, you know,
without dance training can do.
Yeah, we had a great choreographer in our last show, and she brought out some things, but you can definitely know who were the trained dancers and who weren't when it came to that. Upstairs, Dorian's thugs have let him know that something has gone wrong, because Dorian's number two dies in front of them because he got in a shootout with the cops outside the bank, and it's, who did this? Hey, that's him right there, dancing with Tina! So, the bad guy starts shooting at Stanley, and this is where some of the special effects really don't hold up. Like, the one where he grabs his crotch and makes a tunnel out of it to avoid the gunshots?
Yeah.
That one was really a little bit rough.
Mm-hmm.
But I did read that this was nominated for an Oscar for special effects, but it lost to Forrest Gump that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just because of, like, Captain Dan's legs?
Well, I think because of Dan's legs, but actually, like, I know I've watched behind-the-scenes stuff of Forrest Gump before, and there's one scene with Lieutenant Dan where he...
Lieutenant.
Where he swings to go jump off the boat. And what they actually did is they actually had a cutout in the railing and they had to like digitally put in the railing there. And so it was things like that. Hmm. Plus there's all the stuff with him, like with presidents being drinking Dr. Pepper, you know, shit like that. But we also see that the tie, when they shoot it, turns back into Stanley's pajama pattern. But my favorite one in all of this is the cowboy death scene, where it's, ooh, you got me, partner. And then he has the whole death scene with the coughing, where he keeps turning away for the coughing, except for the one where he coughs right in the guy's face.
Yeah.
He's given the Academy Award for his performance. But there's also the moment that I've never really noticed before or never really tracked before is how Dorian is standing off to the side and starts primping himself up when they bring in the audience on the bottom of the screen. Like, he's actually part of this all of a sudden. So again, how does his magic work? But I thought that was a fun moment.
Yeah, my favorite part of that whole thing is the shuffle when he's like,
yeah.
I mean, we're in an audio, so people can't see it. But if you go watch the movie, you'll see.
Yeah, the bow-legged shuffle. Yeah,
that is an interesting thing about the mass powers, though. Is it's almost like people can't help but be carried away by the scene that he's creating.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people become characters in his play or whatever.
His fantasy projections.
Yeah.
But the cops show up and they arrest Dorian for robbing the bank. But at this moment, Lieutenant Calloway sees a piece of fabric sitting on the floor. Oh, Ipkiss! And so he goes to see Stanley at home. And as he's knocking, there's the whole, I'll be there in a minute, be there in a minute. Wouldn't the cop notice that, like, he's saying this right from the other side of the door? Like, what's taking you so long, Stanley? But this is where he's trying to hide all the money in the closet. But, like, some great physical comedy there from Jim Carrey. Like, it's so simple, but there's something about him trying to stuff all this money back in and the fight with Milo over the mask and then just ends up leaving the dog in the closet. Like, it's great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, his excuse to the lieutenant once he opens the door is that somebody stole his pajamas. But... go figure, the lieutenant is suspicious of Stanley. We get a quick scene of Dorian offering $50,000 to someone to find the green-faced freak. So this right here is like the first mention.
Yeah.
No one else has questioned it up until now. Tina has fallen in love with him. I don't know.
It's just his charisma and charm.
Yeah.
They just look past the green face.
That's right. They see what's going on in the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, next morning at work, Stanley comes in over an hour late, but this time he's grown a bit of a backbone. He tells off his boss. Tina shows up, and she's fishing for information about the mask, because she was kind of turned on by his dancing. Not the last time she'll play a character who is into a green-skinned person. I guess Cameron Diaz has a type there, huh?
Who's the other group?
Shrek!
Oh, yeah, Shrek.
Shrek!
Shrek, yes.
But Stanley kind of humble brags that he might know the mask and may have taught him all of his own dance moves. Could you have him meet me tonight at Landfill Park at sunset? Landfill Park is interesting to me. I guess it's actually a thing, isn't it? Don't we have a park in our city that is built on a landfill?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah. It's not uncommon, but I don't know anybody who would call it Landfill Park.
Yeah, you don't think you want to break that situation. But, like, it's also interesting that, like, they're talking about the methane is doing, like, pretty things to the sky tonight. And it's like, well, I don't think it was ready to build a park on then if you're still getting methane seeping into the air all around you. That doesn't seem safe. Especially in a couple minutes here when the mask lights up a cigarette with all these methane fumes floating around in the air. That doesn't seem right.
There's a lot, like, not explained about Edge City. Like, aside from what you were mentioning before about the time period and all that, but it's just, it seems like there's something happening in the world. Like, is it meant to be so dirty and, like, kind of overly polluted in a Captain Planet's nightmare? Or is it, like... like, is that part of it? Has something happened in the world that we're just not aware of?
Yeah, I don't know. But Stanley, before his evening out with Tina, goes to get his mask looked at by an expert, Dr. Arthur Newman, who is played by Ben Stein. And he tells him it's likely Norse 4th or 5th century, probably a representation of the god Loki. And, I mean, the story that he tells, I love how the mythology is accurate according to Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tries to show the Dr. Newman what the mask can do, but apparently it doesn't work during the daytime.
I find it odd that in the scene when Stanley's talking to the doctor and he's like,
you know, there's that moment where he's like going to show him like how the mask works, mm-hmm. and stuff. And he puts it on his face and then like does like he just does all the moves. Like,
yeah.
And I was just like, why would you need to do that?
Yeah.
Like, because then it legitimately just seems like you're just imagining something even at night that's not even happening.
Yeah, because every time we see him put on the mask before this, like, he just has to get it close, and, like, his face starts sucking towards it.
Yeah.
They're trying to be attached. That, yeah, you're right. Why are you going through all these motions?
Yeah, like, he's making it seem almost... It reminded me of, if you've ever seen a Goofy movie, mm-hmm. and he has, like, the perfect cast, and it's, like, forward, back, side to side, like, twirl around and stuff, and it was almost like, is that the key to unlocking the mask powers?
So Stanley has to get to his date with Tina, but the cops follow him to Landfill Park. It is going well with Tina, but Stanley just is not confident enough, so he runs off and comes back as the mask, basically being Pepe Le Pew, who was recently cancelled by cancel culture. This is a little problematic, I guess. If we're going to cancel Pepe Le Pew, I guess we have to cancel the mask as Pepe Le Pew as well. But I don't find him as funny in this incarnation of the mask as he is at any other time as the mask.
Yeah.
Like, this is the one scene that I've never really been behind.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just kind of like, I don't know. I like the romance between the mask and Tina as much as in the, like, Cocobongo Club scene.
Yeah.
Like, that was really good. But the actual, like, oh, we're going to try to have a relationship stuff, I feel like that should have just been solely left to Stanley.
Yeah. Well, the cops bust in on this scene, and he says, it wasn't me, it was the one-armed man. Wasn't this also a line in Ace Ventura?
Oh, I don't know.
I could have sworn, like, the scene where he's up in Roger Pedactor's apartment with the cops, I'm pretty sure he says something about, it was the one-armed man.
Hmm.
I don't know, I could be wrong. But the gags of emptying his pockets are hilarious. Like, the mouse trap, the bazooka, the picture of Callahan's wife. Which is, like, signed, like, call me lover or something. But it's a very simple effect. They had his pants cut off at the knees with prop guys feeding these things into his leg hole.
Oh.
which I just thought was fun. It's like bagged and my stepmother is an alien.
Yeah.
But he gets away from the cops and locks the door to the park. Locks the door to the park? Like, this isn't Jurassic Park. Why is there such a huge gate at the front of this park?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I remember when I was in, when I was in London, there was a park that, like, they did lock them at night.
Hmm.
So that people, I guess people can come in and, like, vandalize them or whatever.
Okay.
Like, in Edmonton, technically, nobody's supposed to be in a park, like, after 11 o'clock or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They do have hours of operation, yeah.
But there's definitely not, I've not seen, like, a big gate be locked.
Yeah, the idea of locking a park is bizarre to me. But this is where we get our Cuban Pete song, because he is surrounded by cops once he gets through that door. It's actually kind of impressive that this is Jim Carrey singing. He's a pretty good singer. I remember years ago, and I wish I could find this online somewhere, but I had this George Martin tribute album because he was the producer of the Beatles, and so it was famous people singing Beatles songs, and one of them was Jim Carrey singing I Am the Walrus.
Oh, yeah.
And I lost my CD copy of this, and I can't find it anywhere, but he was really good in that. But yeah, he sings this Cuban Pete song.
Wow.
And again, I'm a sucker for a good musical number, so you got me on this one.
Yeah,
it's toe tapping.
I really like it. It's definitely, like, I was watching this with my daughter, and I could see that she was kind of bumping to it, so.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, like, if this comedy thing doesn't work out for Jim Carrey, I mean, he could be a song and dance man. I mean, he's pretty good. I think that kid will be all right, you know?
Yeah. I feel like even now sometimes, like, maybe he'll have, like, the Steve Martin phase to his career where he just plays the banjo and then sing songs with his friends.
Well, he's already a painter. I watched that Andy and Jim documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, he does a lot of art. But But just like your daughter, the cops can't resist either. And then he also kisses some random woman on the street. Dude, it's called consent, okay? Like, geez, the mask, you're just so... No respect.
I mean, is the mask... The mask might be toxic masculinity, I think.
Oh, right there. Masculinity spelled M-A-S-K-ulinity? Yeah.
Toxic masculinity. I mean...
if they reboot a darker version of it, that's what it could be. Yeah. Toxic masculinity. That's what'll set it apart.
Yeah.
But the cops start to snap out of it and are chasing Stanley, but Peggy Brandt to the rescue! And we gotta have that one dimwit sidekick cop, though. Like, Lieutenant Calloway's partner, you know, with he shoots at him. I missed him. We all missed him, Doyle! But Stanley, he confides in Peggy. With the mask, he can do anything. Be anyone! And she tries to convince him that he's all he needs to be. But it turns out to be a setup. Poor Stanley, unlucky at love. Dorian comes in. She has sold him the mask for $50,000. And then we get the classic comic book trope of, you said you wouldn't hurt him! I lied! So cliche. Dorian asks, hey Stanley, how does the mask work? I don't know, you just put it on! And Dorian puts it on, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you have to say about this, because you mentioned it up at the top. Storm clouds form behind him, because he's evil, I guess. And we get the water rush, and he still has hair.
It's basically what happens is the Hellmouth opens up, and the Buffy the Vampire Slayer makeup department comes into the mask movie and works on this guy's face, and he inexplicably loses his neck, even though that's not what happens to Jim Carrey.
Yeah, and like
he grows like his like upper torso. Triples in size.
Yeah, I was wondering whether they switched actors or whether, like, that neck, especially the neck, is super thick.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's not the same guy, is it?
Yeah.
But I think it is. I didn't come across anything in my research that said Dorian as the mask.
Yeah.
This isn't a Lou Ferrigno situation, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think.
I don't know. I just thought Dorian, like, the mask is like funny, but on Dorian it just looks so that aspect I felt of the movie didn't hold up as well. I just thought it looked so bad, and it's
you
like,
know what it looks like. If it wasn't for the fact that it was green, what it looks like is the old guy in The Lost Boys.
Oh yeah,
you know how we said that like the young guys the prosthetics look good, but on the old guy it looked off. He kind of has that same look, like these pointy cheekbones that just,
yeah,
I don't know, it just
to me he literally just looks like, so this is like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon scenario, but the guy who played Shao Kahn in Mortal Kombat Annihilation, Brian something,
mm-hmm.
he played the vampire Luke in the pilot episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and he was like the big heavy gun of the master who was gonna go like kill everybody so that the master could be free. But he was like one of the vampires that just always had the vampire face on.
Okay.
And that prosthetic looks almost identical to how Dorian looks, just painted green.
Okay. That is a cut that I don't know. I can't go on that, but I'm sure our Buffy fans will probably agree with you on that one.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Dorian is such a weird character in this movie too.
Yeah.
Because I don't really get like what his, clearly his goal is to just become the biggest, baddest gangster there is, but it's like, okay, sure, but there's like nothing else to it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even seem to be very good at it.
No, not especially. So the bad guys go to Stanley's apartment to get their money back, and Milo's such a good boy. Milo to the rescue. He chases after the car because he sees Stanley inside with his mouth duct tape, and we cut to a frustrated Lieutenant Calloway who is busy telling his partner, it's not like Stanley Ipkiss is going to fall right into my lap, when Stanley Ipkiss falls right into his lap. And Stanley says, I can explain everything. Oh yeah, you can explain everything? Explain this! And he pulls out the green mask, which looks absolutely nothing like the mask, except for the fact that it's bald and green. Like,
yeah.
Like, it could have almost been like a Michael Myers mask spray painted green, is how much like what we saw before that this looks like. I don't know. But Stanley gets put in the slammer, and Milo is outside, and Stanley is definitely lucky that Edge City is equipped with jail cells that have open bars to the outside. Like, maybe that's why it's not set in a real city, but that's something that would be in the 20s, maybe? So, but this city doesn't even seem like it has the right climate for bars on the window, because, like, just in the previous scene, we saw that it was raining. Like, mm-hmm. These are poor conditions for this jail. But Tina comes to see Stanley in jail, and she now asks, how does it work? And he says, well, it brings out your innermost desires. And we get the sensitive moment of, if you're a hopeless romantic like me, it turns you into a hopeless romantic. No, it turns you into a fucking sex predatory horn dog is what it turns you into. The security in this prison is so lax. Like, not only do they have, like, the windows that open to the outside, but she gets to come right up to the cell and they're kissing through the, or about to kiss through the bars. You know, like, we've got the one guard that's there. It's just, it's such a casual station.
I was going to say, as far as I can tell, there's only one person who works the entire prison.
Yeah, because the detectives are out on duty right now.
Yeah.
But Dorian's guys are outside waiting for Tina, and boy, there's that one guy that has his head entirely shaved except for the braided ponytail. What the fuck is up with that hairstyle?
I was like, that is a hairstyle that you need to commit to.
That's a choice.
For people to take you seriously.
And you gotta be able to back that one up. He's gotta be really scary to pull off that hairdo.
Yeah.
But Dorian catches up with Tina and realizes that, hey, she was about to skip town. And we also see that Dorian has explosives in his limo. Stanley hears Tina scream from his wide open window, and the snoozing cop won't do anything to help her. So Stanley calls for Milo, who is laying vigil in the alley. And remember how I taught you not to jump up on people? Forget all that. And we get hero Milo. And the part where he goes, you know, Milo, go get those keys. Go get them. Not the cheese. The keys. Milo's performance is incredible. Like, that dog should have gotten some sort of award.
Yeah, Milo's the scene stealer for sure.
Oh, he's an absolute stud. But Stanley gets out of his cell, and then he abducts the Lieutenant Calloway at gunpoint, and we get more from the dim-witted cop partner here, where Calloway tries to use pig Latin to warn him, to tell him about the abduction. And he's like, oh, I know pig Latin. Ave, ice nay, day, a day. Man, I'm bad at pig Latin. Holy shit. But Dorian shows up at the casino night where they are raising money for the War Orphans Fund. The mayor is there. Dorian is all masked up. Okay, so now all the other guys with guns start shooting at Dorian, and he just stands there and absorbs everything. But his henchmen aren't taking cover or anything. How have they not hit anybody else? Like, are they all aiming at Dorian instead of the guys with guns?
I mean, I thought about that too in the Coco Bongo scene. It's almost like whoever is wearing the mask just magnetically attracts bullets, because, you know, at the point where his tie got hit, like, Tina is only 30 centimeters below there, mm-hmm. and they're all just firing, and Dorian claims to, like, care about her so much.
Yeah. But the other thing they decide to shoot at is the giant piggy bank. You would think that would ruin half their money by firing machine guns into this piggy bank full of cash.
Yeah.
What's the point of robbing it if you're going to destroy half of it? There is one background actor in the scene that says, don't you have respect for law and order? What kind of thugs are you? Like, what a bizarre line that they threw in here.
Yeah.
It's almost like the gold jacket's yours, happy shooter's gonna choke. Stanley sneaks in, but he gets caught, and Milo gets himself out of the car where he's locked in with the lieutenant. What a smart dog. Of course, I have to admit, Milo would probably be pretty annoying to have as a pet after a while if he's able to open doors on his own and everything like that. Dude, I'm in here taking a shit! Come on! Yeah.
But I mean, he understands English, seemingly, so it's like, maybe he's coachable?
That's true. Because, yeah, he really does, because, yeah, the go get the keys, no, not the cheese, the keys.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Tina gets tied up with explosives all around her, and she asks Dorian for one last kiss as a request. And when he comes at her with his, like, creepy forked tongue, she's like, no, no, I want to kiss your real lips. But it's a ruse! She manages to kick the mask out of his hand, and Milo catches it, and then we get Mask Dog. I love Mask Dog.
Yeah.
Even though it involves, like, a whole lot of pee jokes.
Yeah.
But Mask Dog is a lot of fun.
Even though I really like it, it was one of the ones where I was like, the CGI here is a little bit, I don't know. It just seemed like not as, it's like they couldn't hide it as well.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't hide, because it had to be so over the top. The flaws in it were more obvious than other points in the movie.
Yeah, and they had to cover up the whole head, whereas before, Jim Carrey did a lot of the heavy lifting with the makeup, you know?
Yeah.
But Stanley gets into some fist fights. And he has one line here that for some reason I've always loved, where he says, I hope you enjoy your victory with one friggin' eye, and pokes the gun. I don't know what it is about the line, but just the one friggin' eye has always gotten me for some reason. We get fist fight between Stanley and Dorian while Milo with the mask takes everyone else out. And then Stanley gets the mask off Milo and the mask gets shot out of his hand. And so he dives behind the bar to retrieve it. But I noticed something here. When the henchmen are shooting at the bar, like, they've all got their machine guns on the bar, one of the bongo drums that's sitting in front of the bar comes flying towards the camera.
Hmm.
Now, I'm no physics expert. We've established this on this show before. But I don't understand how it would bounce backwards from where it was sitting with machine gun fire. Yeah, you're at a loss too? Okay.
I was trying to think. Maybe it was a weird, like, you know, like a scene that was rewound and then played forward.
Mm.
Or, yeah. I mean, physics-wise, the only way that could happen is if, like, it got hit at, like, a precise point to then, like, hit and then bounce back, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, here comes the mask again. He manages to flush Dorian away by painting a flush valve on the tree, and manages to save Tina by swallowing dynamite. That's a spicy meatball! But, again, I don't know how his magic works. Like,
yeah.
The mask is just invincible.
Like, you don't really know what his weak point, the weak point is just taking it off.
Yeah.
But it's really such that the only way it can be taken off is for the person who has it to take it off. It's almost like genie powers.
Yeah.
But I thought that I feel like the flushing Dorian down the thing was kind of an anticlimactic end to the conflict, in my opinion.
Well, see, from what I read is they were hoping that there was going to be a sequel right away.
Oh, okay.
And not like the shitty Son of the Mask sequel that we ended up getting like a decade later. But yeah, they were hoping to set this up for a sequel and Dorian was going to live.
Oh, okay.
So,
it's funny that you mentioned that. One of the things I read was that Nintendo Power magazine ran a contest where the winner of the contest was going to get a walk-on role for The Mask 2.
Yeah.
That never happened.
Yeah.
And they apologized for it in their very last issue.
Yeah.
How disappointed would you be?
Yeah, you can't complain anymore because the magazine no longer exists. Yeah, that would suck. Like, you gotta hope that they sent him, that person, some sort of compensation more than just an apology.
Yeah. I just imagine being like, well, the movie's like trapped in development hell and you're this poor winner and you're like trying to get on the phone to Nintendo Power. You're like thinking this is going to be my big break.
Yeah.
Like how do, and they're just like, you're just like, I can't get a hold of anyone. People are giving me the runaround. And the movie never happens and the magazine goes out of business.
So Stanley and Tina almost kiss, but Charlie had gone outside to get the cops and that interrupts this kiss. Lieutenant Calloway wants to arrest Stanley, but this is when the mayor, that's a killer mustache that the mayor is rocking. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's just like the cop that we saw in Police Academy with the big bushy mustache.
There was a scene earlier on where the mayor was talking, and I thought, so much so that I had to go online and fact check it, but I thought for sure it was Stanley Hudson from The Office.
Oh. He does have a similar voice, yeah. But the mayor vouches for Stanley saying that Dorian was the mask. And leave that dog alone. That's a great moment.
Yeah.
The mayor had witnessed everything that Milo did. And so we get our little denouement of this movie where Stanley is driven to the bridge by Charlie with Tina to throw the mask over the edge. I guess he never got his car back.
Oh.
After all that defacing of the property and sticking tailpipes up the asses of the mechanics, he never actually took his car back.
But I mean, he also has a closet full of money that no one ever... I don't think anyone ever took back.
No, the bad guys did.
Did they get it?
Yeah, that's why Milo saw him tied up in the back of the car.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because the bad guys went to get their money. And then they go to rob the piggy bank anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, he throws the mask over the edge. And finally, Tina and Stanley get to kiss. And Charlie jumps in after the mask. And so did Milo. The kiss is ended with smoking and the end. And that is the mask. So, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 6.9 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 56. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 77% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 58%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a giant cartoon mallet trying to smash an alarm clock that's dancing down a hallway. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, I decided to change things up this week, and instead of going to Rotten Tomatoes, I went to Metacritic.
Okay.
So the first review is from NJKK, 7 out of 10, says, "What kind of superhero is he? Half the movie he spends his time trolling the police / gangsters. Still, I found it hilarious when I was a kid. It is a good movie to watch for entertainment value."
Okay.
I like that last line.
That's quite, yeah, concise.
Rob Wins gave it 9 out of 10 stars, and he says, "The Mask has to be one of the funniest and most quotable movies going. Jim Carrey is amazing when he's playing The Mask and Stanley Ipkiss. It makes the movie even more funnier than it already is. Finally, the rest of the cast do pretty well for what they're given, and this movie alone is always fun to come back to. Overall, you need to watch this movie if you haven't. It's honestly one of the most funny and most quotable movies going. It's honestly worth the watch."
This guy really likes the quotes in this movie.
Yeah.
He mentions it twice. Yeah, I do really wish that there had been more Jim Carrey Mask, because he did do a really good job. I mean, Jamie Kennedy just, he was no Jim Carrey. That's for sure. I mean, the script was definitely no.
I almost honestly, a couple movies that we've watched, I'm almost like, we should do a spinoff podcast of like unwanted sequels or unnecessary sequels, but that'd be a lot of time wasted watching movies that are... we all know we're garbage.
Yeah.
The next review is just one sentence here. It's from 9 out of 10, 64-bit, says, "You will laugh your false teeth out with this charming cartoonish comedy."
Now, is that a reference to the big fake teeth that he had to wear? Or did this guy actually like spit his false teeth out on the floor while he was watching this movie?
Yeah, I'm not sure. He doesn't elaborate.
Oh, okay. Right, one sentence. Sorry, what was I thinking? Yeah.
And then the last one I have is 8 out of 10. Epic Lady Sponge says, "In order to have a good mask movie, you must have Jim Carrey, and it must not blow hard. Just look at Son of the Mask. Don't trust the users on that movie. Only trust the users on this one."
Oh, tell me you went over and took a peek at what the users had to say on Son of the Mask.
I didn't, but let's go. Let's go to Son of the Mask.
What did you say her name was? Was it Lady Sponge? Is that...
Yeah, Epic Lady Sponge.
Epic Lady Sponge, okay.
Okay, Son of the Mask reviews. It says 20. Its Metascore is 20, so it has generally unfavorable reviews. I mean, I don't know what this person is talking about, because it says in the breakdown for Metacritic, it says 0 positive ratings, 5 mixed ratings, and 21 negative ratings.
Okay, well...
Oh, no, wait. That was for the critics. The user reviews is 142 positive ratings, 16 mixed ratings, and 119 negative ratings.
Oh, wow.
Here's the first one. What? Okay, this is fake. It's 10 out of 10. Drax420 for Son of the Mask says, "The best movie ever made. The bit where Jim Carrey pushes Garfield into the sea is so good and probably the greatest movie moment of all time. I quote many lines of dialogue from it daily, such as, 'I hate Mondays, but I love lasagna,' and 'Oh boy, my bones are about to hatch.'"
What?
However, easily the best part is the lightsaber fight with Shrek on top of the Eiffel Tower.
So is it someone that's like legitimately trying to fuck with the ratings, or did someone like sick a bot onto this and it just plucked random nonsense? Oh,
I'm not sure. This is funny though. I just did for The Mask. I read a quote by Rob Wins. So Rob Wins also has a review on Son of the Mask, so he must have been doing a marathon. He gave it 1 out of 10 stars and says, "I watched 30 minutes of this movie and I went to sleep. I would recommend it if you're having problems getting to sleep on the night."
Right on.
There's another one that says, Transformers fan gave it 0 out of 10 stars, and he says, "The worst superhero movie of 2005. This movie is my least favorite movies of 2005, along with Elektra." Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Well, okay, so 56 and 77 from critics, and 6.9 and 58 from audiences. What do you think, Colin? Where do you sit on The Mask?
I'd probably fall around like a 65 to 70%.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. It's definitely not as funny as Ace Ventura or Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of like set pieces. There are really like funny things that happen in it, but I found the story overall to just be kind of lackluster.
It is, isn't it? Okay, that wasn't just me then. Because, yeah, I felt the same sort of thing. It was, okay, here's a few funny segments, but other than that, everything just kind of, here's this scene, here's this scene, here's this scene, but it didn't flow together all that well.
Yeah.
And to spend, how long is that Cuban Pete moment? It's like 5-minute moment. Even though I'm a sucker for a good musical number, that was a long section of movie to devote to just this one gag.
Mm-hmm. You know? Even the Cocobongo like club scene, I was kind of like, did I really need to hear Cameron Diaz sing an entire song? Like, could the point have not just been made by like, you know, like I felt like that scene also was like, it was way longer than it had to be.
Yeah.
But I don't know, yeah, it kind of just seems like one of those movies where all the good stuff was probably in the trailer.
Yeah.
And so everything else, you probably would have, if you had watched the trailer, I mean, back then you would have had to, like, wait until you saw it on TV, but in this day and age, like, if it was on YouTube and you could just go watch it whenever you wanted to, probably end up being pretty disappointed by the time you actually went and watched it in the theater.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I appreciate it for how much I did enjoy it when I was younger. I appreciate it for how cutting edge it was, and the performances are good. Like, Jim Carrey does do a very good job in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's just the story itself is kind of meh. It's just it's disguised through with all this other like flash that's all around it. But once you get to the actual substance of it, it's like, okay, yeah, guy finds a thing.
Yeah.
Guy loses his thing. Guy gets the girl. You know, like it's.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is that when it comes to Jim Carrey and his physical comedy, the thing that I always love about it is his face.
Yeah.
And I think that he does a lot of body stuff in The Mask, but his face, because of the mask probably, it's not that much of a factor in this movie.
Yeah.
All the big face stuff is CGI, mm-hmm. but, you know, you don't get the Jim Carrey face that you see in movies like Liar Liar, and the best one is probably Me, Myself, and Irene, like an Ace Ventura and stuff. Like, you don't get that funny face Jim Carrey as much, even though it's really a movie all about his face.
Yeah, true. Yeah, like, the prosthetics that he had to wear didn't look too constrictive. Like, he was still able to emote quite a bit and everything like that, mm-hmm. but there was still, you're right, there's definitely, you know, a limit to what he was able to do with the makeup on, that it almost seems like they should have just put a bald cap on him and painted his face green.
Yeah.
At times, he might have been able to do more. They might have saved even more on CGI if they had done that.
Yeah.
But I do like the look of it. The special effects hold up fairly well for a movie that's this old. But I think I'd be kind of in the mid-60s range as well.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm glad I revisited it. But there's other Jim Carrey stuff that I enjoy more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gives me more laughs that aren't just all sight gags.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That is The Mask, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is tell your friends. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast trying to get noticed in that huge sea of podcasts out there. We're building this from the ground up. I'm starting a rivalry here, Colin.
Uh-oh.
We're not Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien brags about his millions of downloads that he gets. He wants a rival. We are taking up the mantle of official rival podcast of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. So give us some love. Let us rise up and crush Conan O'Brien's podcast. So just share it with everyone you know. Tell people and help us build our audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say, but it's those 5 stars that drive us up the charts. They help us get noticed, and they're going to help us overtake Conan O'Brien.
This is a private message for Conan, Matt Gourley, and Son of Obsession. Please just know that everything that Sean has just said is not in my heart. I love you guys, and I do not want to be at war with you. Do not crush me with your millions of followers. a cockaroo to you all, and Katakai as God made
her. As God made her! No! We can't get sucked into his charm, Colin. We have to show solidarity. We are going to crush Conan O'Brien. He wants a rival. We're going to be his rival, Colin. Come on. Right. Back me up.
Like I said before, please, Conan, just have mercy on me. And but anyways, if you would like to get in touch with us, you can check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Please go on there, give us some likes, give us some comments, give us some shares. If you want to, talk to us or let us know what you think of the show, that would be a good place to do it. But you can also reach us by email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Send us an email, Conan O'Brien, if you want to accept our challenge of enemy adversary shift. That's a word. That would be the good place to do it. Again, I used to like this one, all one word @gmail.com. Send us an email, let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on our show.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show and donate to us, you can go to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and become part of our Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is also produced by Joshua Blum from the 13th Hour Podcast. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.